Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson, and as always, I'm sitting here with KC Clapp.
What's going on, everyone? That's me. I'm KC Clapp. I'm
That's
here.
Him.
Having a good time.
Same old G.
Same old G. I love that saying. I use that so many times. I'm like, well, you know me. Same old G.
Yeah, anytime that anyone says, you know me, I have to follow it up with same
you
old
must.
G.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. Honestly, if you don't, you're culturally out of touch.
That's right.
Okay.
It's how I show people I'm cool.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how other people are like, he's cool.
And then they go, uh-huh.
Oh, no, he's not. Never mind.
I'm decently cool, I think.
Yeah, I think so. You're a singer-songwriter. That's pretty cool.
That gets me some points.
It really does.
I got a nose ring. That's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I got tattoos.
You're very cool.
Yeah, thanks, Alex.
Yeah,
I think you're
welcome.
Very cool, too.
Well, thanks, Casey.
Yeah, you're welcome anyway. What else are we talking about
today? What a way to start an episode. Casey, as you may or may not be able to hear, dear listener, we are outside right now. This is our very first mainline episode of Completely Arbitrary that we are recording out of doors.
Out of doors.
Hey, you know what? That word outdoors literally means outdoors.
Yeah. Out of doors.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I suppose maybe they just said, they just took away the of, right?
Out of doors?
Yeah, because that's a lot to say. Where are you? Out of doors. Where are you? Outdoors.
I walked outdoors to get here.
Yeah. Ooh, that doesn't sound as good.
We're sitting on a back deck. We're surrounded by beautiful big Douglas fir trees, mostly. Yep. A couple giant sequoia. And we just really felt like mixing it up, I guess.
You know, yeah, we did. There was an opportunity, and we're like, oh, yeah, sure, let's just go do it.
Yeah, an opportunity presented itself.
Yeah.
I said, Casey, please drive all the way out here.
And that is because, Alex, you are going to be taking the next week off. And
yeah.
It was going to be silly of you to drive all the way back out here when you're actually going to be going further west. I'm sorry, further east. You're
going to
be doing a sojourn. So, Alex, so you're going to a lovely place outside of White Salmon-ish area,
yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm going to go for go live in a cabin in the woods for about a week. I'm going to meditate a lot and do a lot of Qigong, write a lot of music, hopefully.
Those are just the means to the end.
It's honestly, it's hard and unproductive to say, I'm going to make art this week, because then inevitably the art does not come. There's too much pressure. You have to kind of look away from it and hope that it inches closer to you.
Okay, I gotcha. It's like one of those ghosts in Mario.
That's a really good example, Casey. I was also going to use like an abused shelter dog.
Oh.
You have to like put the food bowl down and then like sit in the corner facing away from it.
That's what you're describing your music as?
Yeah.
Is an abused shelter
dog? I know that
doesn't.
I don't have a great relationship with my art.
You got to meditate on that, bro.
But yeah, you were gracious enough to drive out here, and we use the opportunity to sit outside.
Yeah, it's going to be nice. It's a lovely day. We had a thunderstorm this morning. It's not quite as hot as it would be, but it's still toasty.
It is quite lovely. I'm sitting just barely in the sun, and I am feeling it.
Yeah, and you look good. You have your microphone. It's a short stance. You look like a crooner kind of sitting there with your cool thing. If you want, you can sit next to me, and we can both sit on this couch.
Yeah, I do love you, Casey, but I'm not really into sitting that close and talking to each other, because then we're going to be, if we face each other, we will literally be 6 inches away from, yeah, from each other's mouths.
It's, it would be like a Meisner acting exercise. A lot of people, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about if you know exactly what I'm talking
about. That's amazing. Yeah, exactly. We're not actors. We're podcasters.
Yeah, exactly.
So Casey, we're talking about a tree this week.
Yeah, speaking of podcasting.
Yep. It is the tree that we're talking about here. I love this name. It's Sour Wood.
Yes.
And boy, speaking of loving names, Casey.
Yeah.
We got a binomial here.
Yeah, we do.
Oxydendrum arboreum.
Exactly.
That is about as phonetic as they come.
It really is. And this is actually one that many people get wrong. Like, it's very common to misspell it or mispronounce it.
Yeah, I think I bet the two biggest mispronunciations,
yeah,
are oxydendron.
Yes.
And arboretum.
Yes. You literally called it. That's exactly it. So it's, yeah, oxydendrum, as in I hit a drum and I make drum sounds.
Yeah.
And I don't know why this has been chosen. Like, I don't know what the ancient Latin reason is for this.
Yeah.
Because normally it would be oxydendron, which would mean acid tree. But
which is perfect for sour wood.
Exactly. Yeah. And now it still is oxy. It still means that. Oxy means acid. Dendrum means tree. But I cannot figure out for the life of me, other than maybe like feminine masculine kind of thing, which I know is the case, but I still just, I don't know the language well enough to be able to figure out why is it spelled like that.
I reckon like many of these things, it's one person like miswrote it at some point.
Like you come to Ellis Island and the tree's like, oxydendron, and they're like, yeah, whatever, oxydendron, get out of here.
New life, new name. So Casey, we're talking sourwood today.
That's right.
And you promised me that I could play a little clip of something that I love dearly.
I sure did.
The word sour will now and forever remind me of one of my favorite internet videos.
Yeah. And I have not heard this yet. You just told me about it.
Yeah. The video is great, but honestly, we can just listen to the audio and it's also wonderful.
All right, give it a shot.
This is just to set the scene here. This is a mother taking a video of her little daughter, toddler, and they're eating raspberries or blackberries or something. And this is the daughter's reaction. So take it away.
It's your shower. We get your shower. Maybe the other ones are not sour. Do you get those ones?
Can we have those ones? Yeah, good call, kid.
There
you know
it is.
What? Here's the trick, everyone. If you're trying to eat a blackberry and you're trying to pull it off the vine, if it relents and goes straight into your hand,
it's ready to go.
It's ready to go. If it even gives you the slightest amount of resistance,
yeah,
leave that berry where it's at.
Those are words of wisdom from Casey Clapp. That is a great way to eat blackberries.
It's honestly a great way to eat almost any berry.
And you know, I know some people, like, I don't mind a tart fruit here or there, a little underripe tart fruit, but there is a line to be drawn.
Well, Alex, I have news for you. We are going to see how tart you prefer your leaves today.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait. But before we get to any of that, we got to take a quick break. We will be right back with the sourwood here on Completely Arbitrary. Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons, and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts, so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees, get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-blooming. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring! Welcome back.
Oh, sorry, Alex. I didn't mean to do that.
We were having a little sing song, I guess.
It's really good. Yeah, yeah.
Casey, today we're talking sourwood.
Yes, we are.
The question on everyone's mind, how do we know this wood is sour?
Well, honestly, that's a trick of the whole thing.
I'm sorry, was this tree named by beavers?
Yeah, what? Come on.
By the Angry Beavers. Remember that show?
I do, yeah. I don't think I ever watched it.
It was a good one. Let's talk about the sourwood. Where does this tree grow?
I think it's a great question, Alex. This is a tree that grows in the eastern United States of America. I don't think that it grows anywhere outside of the United States. I think usually, you know, we'd say eastern North America, which I think is fair here, but it grows from essentially the southwestern corner of Pennsylvania all the way down through the Appalachians and kind of the hills and dry plains and rocky outcrops into the south.
Okay, so to be more specific, you would say eastern United States.
Yes, I would say eastern and southeastern United States is where it's native. And it's a tree that is kind of interesting because it's not like a tree that you're like, oh, boom, yeah, that is a tree.
Oh.
It's like one of those things where you're like, oh, yeah, I guess I guess technically, yeah, that's a tree. You know?
A week.
And I say this, and I even wrote this down in my notes. I said, I mean this with all the love in the world,
wow,
but it's a middling tree.
Oh my gosh.
To say the least.
Well, that I guess it depends on your relationship with this tree.
Very true.
But that could be taken as an insult. I suppose, yes, if you said to a hobbit, you're a very middling inhabitant of Middle Earth.
Yeah.
They might say, well, thank you very much.
Exactly. In a way that they're meaning like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Those hobbits. I reckon the hobbits are...
those hobbits?
I reckon hobbits are pretty, like, passive-aggressive.
Ornery, right? Yeah, I think you're probably
an ornery sort.
And it's an ornery sort.
Well, Casey, let's imagine that we're walking through some eastern United States woods. I've never been, but I'd like to go someday.
You should.
And we come across these sour wood. These sour wood. Let's ID this tree, Casey.
Let's do it, Alex.
And this might be one of the only times we can ID a tree, including its taste.
Yes, exactly. So that's the thing about this tree. It's not actually the wood that is sour. Apparently, the wood is scentless and colorless.
At best.
Yeah, it probably smells like wood.
Okay.
Like wet-ish. I don't know.
Wet wood?
I guess so,
like a wet dog?
Yeah, well, it's not like a wet wood. It's more just like moist, you know?
Okay.
Like you cut down a Doug fir or a cedar or something like a pine, and you get like this intense, like, whew, there's that, like, those smells that come from the wood, the volatile compounds that come out.
Pheromones kind of come out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So apparently this wood is very neutral if you actually cut it and smell it. There's not a lot to it.
Interesting.
But the leaves are the things that have the taste. Now, we'll talk first about the form. We'll get into the leaves in a second because, Alex, I brought some for us to taste.
That's right.
I'm very excited about this.
But are we still going to, are we going to try those now or are we going to try those during our segment later?
Honestly, whenever you want.
I say we wait till the segment.
All right.
If it's okay with you, we're going to have
it's going to be a buildup.
Yes, that's right. And we're going to have a couple special guests for the segment as well.
That sounds wonderful.
So, yeah, we'll save the taste of the leaves. But Casey, continue.
All right. So this is a, like I said, a middling tree. You'd really expect it to be, I would say about 40 feet tall is kind of where you'd guess that'd be maybe an average height of a tree, especially if it's in cultivation outside of its native habitat or on the fringes of its habitat where it starts to not grow quite as well. It apparently can get up to 100 feet tall.
Damn.
But this is the thing. It's a tree that grows like on the edge habitat. It likes to be in the places that nothing else wants to grow or nothing else can grow.
Wow.
It's really uniquely adapted to dry, rocky, acidic habitats.
Hey, man, I'm thinking like the more I learn about trees, I'm thinking like that's what you got to do as a tree.
Yeah.
Adapt to a place where no other tree wants to grow.
Precisely.
You got the fucking house to yourself.
You do, yeah.
It's party time.
It is a little harder, though, you know?
Sure.
It's like, yeah, you got your house to yourself because you live in a neighborhood that nobody else wants to live in, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's on either side. But that's actually something that's interesting. This tree is in the Ericaceae family.
If I'm recalling, we're talking the monkey puzzle.
No.
That's Araucaria.
Araucariaceae, this is Ericariaceae. So, or Ericaceae, excuse me. I know, you got egg all over your face.
Wow.
No, this is the Madrone family.
Oh, lovely.
Otherwise, including the rhododendron, azalea, Andromeda, dog hobble, I think. I could be wrong on that.
Dog hobble?
Yeah, it's like this little kind of diminutive little shrubby kind of thing.
God, I would love to talk about that someday.
It's very fun. Yeah, I'll figure it out. We'll do a side episode on that, I think. It'd be good.
Yeah, that's a good family to be in, Casey. Those are some all-timers.
They're some all-timers. That's totally right.
Uh-huh.
And this family also includes heath and heather and blueberries, cranberries, huckleberries.
No kidding.
Bilberries, which are really just three or four different terms for the same berry. So that's a little bit of a trick. All right. Everyone's into it.
Family's not as big as you think. It's like a clump situation. They're all the same actor.
Exactly. It's all the same thing. But this, I will say, it's actually not quite right. There is about 4,250 species in this family.
God damn.
Yeah, there's giant amount of diversity in, like, I think it's in South Africa and in the mountains of South America.
Okay.
And, like hundreds of different species of these things. And they initially were like, there's a couple here, there, mostly in the northern areas. But the family has diversified in such an extraordinary way that Ericaceae has plants that grow in the Arctic, like all the way up to the highest point that plants can grow, all the way down through all the tropics and everywhere you can imagine in between. They have things that grow as trees like the madrone. They have things that are shrubs like the rhododendron and vaccinium, the huckleberries and blueberries.
Yeah.
And then they have these tiny little herbs, and I'm not even sure if they're really herbs. They're mostly woody little shrubs that don't get more than a couple inches.
Wow.
Like, it's an amazingly diverse thing.
To put it in your terms, Risk?
Yeah.
The board game?
Oh, yeah, sure, sure,
classic
sure.
board game, yeah, that you love so much.
My favorite.
This is like the Ericaceae?
This is Ericaceae.
The Ericaceae is like, they've got cannons and cavalry and foot soldiers and pikemen. I don't know if that's the wrong era. And halberd wielders.
Yeah, they do. It's all the, you got the eras.
And royal assassins. And plagued rats.
They got them all. Yeah, let's deploy the plagued rats.
Whereas some families in the are just like, they have all cavalry or all trees is
yes,
the metaphor I'm making.
Totally.
Yeah,
that's very
so
right.
I
yeah.
really like a plant family that is just so diverse.
It is, and it's done it all.
Yeah.
And it's done it all very well, not in small part, because it's made an evolutionary arrangement with some mycorrhizal fungi.
An arrangement, huh?
We'll get to that in a second.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
Because first we have to talk about the arrangement of the leaves.
Oh, wow.
What a transition, Casey.
That was amazing.
Gave myself a high five on
you know,
that.
All this experience of hosting this podcast is really paying off.
It really is. It really is. I can transition from going 180 degrees one direction to 180 degrees the other direction. No problem.
Both conversationally and physically.
Yeah,
you're a very agile man.
I'm going to turn around right now.
Casey, you got to face the microphone.
Sorry.
Silly.
Anyway, so it's an alternately leaved plant.
Okay.
The leaves, they're kind of fun. They look like giant huckleberry leaves or giant blueberry leaves. In fact, I'm going to pull some up right now.
Casey's got a twig. A twig? Is twig sort of colloquial?
Yeah, I think a twig is the most recent, maybe 2-3 years worth of growth in a slightly technical sense.
And the branch is further down.
Exactly.
Or something?
Yeah, yeah. Where okay. those end and start wow. is very much it's superficial, but the twig certainly is the current year, the last year, and maybe the year before that, because
okay.
they show different characteristics than the branches going dip back.
Oh.
So if you imagine it as a spectrum, the tip of the twig is showing certain things. The base of that branch is showing other things.
Cool.
So it's kind of a spectrum like
all
that.
All ages as or changes as it ages, rather.
Yeah, exactly.
Casey, may I take a stab at
please, yes.
At your heart?
Yeah. For those of you who know Alex has no knife in his hand, so I assume the metaphor was.
Unless I'm like Assassin's Creed with one of those wrist kind of sleeve
knives.
Oh,
yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah. Well, those luckily cool. you're not wearing any sleeves.
Or white robes.
Yes, so.
Casey, so these leaves, I will say, are very simple, not in a botanical sense, but in a
Ooh.
Kind of creative sense.
In both.
They are sort of shaped like a cartoon pair of lips, just like a normal, very basic leaf.
Okay, yes,
what
exactly.
do you call that?
It's a simple leaf.
Well, I thought a simple leaf just meant that it wasn't compound.
That's exactly what it means, correct.
Okay.
I would usually say this is just a standard leaf.
A leaf-shaped leaf.
Exactly, which is hard. I mean, that's a hard way to describe it, but this would probably be described as ovoid, ellipsoidal, maybe?
Yes,
something
okay.
like that.
It's a little longer
yep.
than your basic leaf, and it's got this very curious, at least, yeah, a few of them here, so it's officially an ID characteristic.
Uh-huh.
Has an acuminate tip.
Yes, which means it goes to this very sharply pointed end.
Yes, but that acuminate tip is whorled.
It is. It's kind of twisted, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's not just like straight out. It has kind of a little cowlick to
it.
Yeah,
right. That's a great descriptor.
They're green. What else?
Yeah, and they're kind of light green almost.
Yeah, it's kind of a lime green potentially.
Yeah.
They're a very attractive leaf.
They really are.
They're sort of just a leaf. I noticed one of them has kind of a red to orange discoloration at the base of the leaf.
Yes, and that these trees are, they grow in like the rough spots of the world.
Yeah.
But they're also somewhat, even though they grow in these spots, they're still sensitive. So this tree actually had a few other leaves that were just turning straight into fall color.
Wow.
So that tells me that it's just a little bit stressed growing where it was growing.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but that's it's a planter strip. That's what you expect. It's the end of summer. Oh. Haven't had a lot of water, so I'm not surprised. But I tried to snag a little sprig that was of leaves that were still kicking it.
Well, it's beautiful. And that's the leaves, Case.
Yeah, and there's one other thing to note is that the very edge has often these little tiny irregular teeth on it.
Oh, yeah.
So some of them are very much serrated, where there's little serrations all the way down.
Uh-huh.
But then some leaves are perfectly entire, where there's no serrations whatsoever.
Curious.
And then the thing is, a lot of the leaves show both things at the same time. So it's entire, which means there's no serrations or anything along the edge. Then there's 1, 2, 3, 4, and then there's nothing. Then there's 1, 2, then there's nothing. And they're all very, very teeny tiny.
Okay.
So they can be there. Sometimes the whole leaf is like that. Other times it's just completely smooth.
That's just the way it grows?
It's just the way it grows.
Yeah.
And it looks a lot like a madrone leaf and also a tupelo. And the tupelos...
Tupelo.
Yeah, we haven't covered a tupelo yet.
Like a water tupelo?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, there's water, there's black tupelo. Those are the two big ones that grow around. They tend to have similar leaves, but they have, most of the time, no serrations whatsoever.
Oh.
And they're a little bit darker, and they're a little bit smaller and more rounded. This one has that really pointy tip. They tend to have less pointy tips. It doesn't become quite so bristly.
It's curious that you could say, it looks a lot like this other leaf, and then give me four examples of how it's different.
Well, hey, that's what you got to do, right?
I suppose so.
Yeah,
I mean,
like, if you have a leaf that looks like this, you can say to yourself, yeah, it looks just like all these other leaves because, like you said, they're very much a leaf-like leaf.
Yeah.
So you have to look closely and kind of say, okay, so what are the differences?
I see.
Because if I pulled both these up in front of you, you would look at them and say, yeah, okay, they're different, but how? And you got to be really, really intentional about choosing the small little differences.
That's a good point, Case.
Well, Alex, these leaves in the fall time, as you noticed, will turn extraordinarily red. And I mean like scarlet the way that Johansson has never been. It is
O'Hara red.
Exactly. It's just like, it's one of the most stunning fall colors I have seen. Yet the trees themselves, like their whole form, is very much like the swoosh of hair on a, let's say, 18-year-old boy who just graduated high school and has grown his hair out. But not like really long, just long enough to where his mom's like, you just need to either grow it out or cut it.
Like maybe a bit of a Lord Farquaad cut?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
From
yeah,
Shrek.
Yeah. Yes. I was thinking more of Casey Clapp circa 2007, but yes.
Wow. It's
So they kind of have this like almost shag top kind of swooshiness to the top of their crown.
Mm.
And the flowers also help out with this. The flowers hang down in these long kind of racemes, but they basically have this long rib that comes out, this little stem, and then the flowers hang down like kind of lanterns, just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah.
And they're urn-shaped, and this is a very classic shape of a flower in the Ericaceae family, where they look like they're big and bulbous, but all of their petals are fused together until they kind of create this small opening, and then they just kind of pop back out. Very much like an old pot or a piece of pottery you'd find. Very, very, it feels like a very ancient kind of pottery type, you know?
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
I think so.
Okay, yeah.
They're honestly kind of gorgeous, Casey.
They really are, and they kind of sit on top of the leaves because they're terminal, as you can see here, which means that they, as the new shoot comes out, there's leaves left, right, left, right, left, right, and then the end of the shoot pops out this big, long, kind of branching flower bit that has all these little flowers that just kind of come down and pop up.
It's gorgeous.
In fact, actually, I should say the flowers themselves usually hang down, and then when the fruit happens, they kind of turn upwards.
So we're recording this in late August.
Yep.
The example that you brought with you here, this little twig, it looks like the flowers are partially bloomed.
Yeah, so they end up blooming from the back out to the tip, from the base of the flower out to the tip.
Okay.
So the ones that are closest to the stem, closest to like the main stem and the leaves, those will bloom first, and then they'll just go down the line, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
That makes sense.
So the very, very tip, those flowers are newest, so they're just now coming out. The ones at the base have already come out, and now they're turning into their fruit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you can see the transition happen.
So this has flowers and fruit on it at the same time.
Yep, exactly.
Is that something that you find often?
No, generally not. Okay. Most of the time, you'll find flowers happen, then they're done, then the fruit comes on. Yeah,
right.
So in this case, because it kind of grows and starts flowering as it's ready, it's usually called an indeterminate tip.
Wow.
Tomatoes are often like this.
Uh-huh.
Then you can have flowers and fruit happen at the same time because it's kind of constantly growing new flowers.
I almost imagine like the nutrients or whatever it needs to make the flower kind of like being pushed from the main stem outward toward the end of the leaves.
Exactly. It's where the first flowers to get it, they're like, sweet, we got what we need, we're going to go.
And then they keep going down the highway.
Exactly.
The next flower's like, hey, my shipment.
Hey, right, cool, thank you.
Yeah.
And it gets going. Yeah, you got it spot on.
Gorgeous case.
So then you get those little fruit, obviously. Right now they're green, but they turn into like these little capsules that look like kind of unattractive berries that turn into these hard kind of, not, I don't want to say hard, but they become kind of dry and not flavorful. No one would eat these at all. You wouldn't look at them and say, oh, there's something to eat. They're just these kind of brown capsules.
As Paul F. Tompkins says, it's not something you would pop in your mouth and go, yum, yum.
Thank you, Paul. You are just, you know it all.
Just the funniest man alive.
Yeah, so that's kind of the thing about this. And they all, like, the flowers add to this swooshiness to the top of the crown. But the bark is really the thing that gets me going.
I thought you were going to say the bark is on fire.
I should have, but you're dealing with someone who only thinks of jokes afterwards and hopes that I can actually get them in somehow.
Well, hey, so do I, Casey. I have the luxury of you get to talk, and then as you're talking, I figure out a joke.
I see.
When you're done talking, I tell the joke.
Yeah.
So it seems like I'm coming up with it on the spot, but I've had a few seconds.
I gotta figure that out. I gotta slow down a little bit.
I mean, no, I'm very good at.
Hey, do it immediately. Whatever I just said, forget about it. Well, so the bark is. It's the thing that I've remembered about this tree since I first learned about it.
It's incredible.
It's just this. It's so beautiful. It's rough, and it looks like it's thick, but I don't think it really gets thick in a traditional sense.
Yeah.
But it forms these like alligator-like ridges, and the ridges kind of are broken a little bit on the top and the bottom. But they're very longitudinal, and they kind of cross over each other. You know, they're regular. Like the whole pattern they make is very consistent over the entire base of the tree.
I believe what I have is an almost perfect visual analogy.
What is
this? Is like maybe a 9 out of 10.
Holy shit! Okay.
This bark looks like the matted fur of a wild mammal.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
Like think like the hind leg fur of like an ox or something.
All right,
or
yeah.
A buffalo or like an uncared for house dog or something.
Okay, so it just has to be, you know, kind of left there, not brushed out, and it becomes matted up.
Really matted fur, and it kind of creates little like ridges and pockets and things.
Yeah. I think I can see exactly what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, I know I can, and it's great.
9 out of 10. 9 out of 10.
I give my own ratings.
Yeah, so they end up, they kind of have these flat-topped ridges, is that how I've always imagined them?
Oh, sure.
Where it's like ridges that just develop these cubic kind of scales to them.
Cubic scales, that's great.
And then they just get bigger and bigger. As the tree expands, they just kind of get deeper and deeper because they're splitting. But then as they split, because they're on this this circular cylinder of a tree trunk, when the thing is small, they look like they're really close together. But then as it grows out, out, they also kind of spread apart.
But they're not getting bigger necessarily.
Exactly, because they're not growing. It's growing from the base.
Right.
So they look like they're getting bigger, but they're not. They're just getting wider spaced, and there's more that are appearing in between.
That's cool.
So they just develop this incredibly rough, gorgeous appearance where you're just like, that's a tree that's ready for anything.
Man, so far, this tree's kind of killing it visually. Yeah,
it really is. But they're tiny little trees. The only way that you'd see this tree really big is if it started growing in an abandoned field, something mm-hmm. like this. It started kicking it. Some other things are like, yeah, okay, I can start growing there. They start growing, and now you get this competition where the trees are all trying to grow tall as they can, and your sourwood maybe got a head start, so it's kind of still kicking it, and then it gets taller and taller and taller until it's this big, tall, spindly thing
wow.
with this little mop of branches and foliage at the top. Or it grows on the side where no one else wants to grow, so it just kind of stays on this edge habitat on all these rocky slopes and just kind of pops its way out. If you drive through the Great Smoky Mountains on, I think it's like maybe Highway 80 or something.
Mm.
As you're driving through, in the fall especially, you can see these red trees just like pow, 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 pow.
Those are sourwood?
Right out of the side of the rocks.
Damn.
Exactly, yeah. They're really tough trees.
Wow.
But they can compete, but 90% of the time, their competitive advantage is not growing tall and getting big like an oak or a hickory or something like that. They have the competitive advantage of, like you said, growing where nobody else wants
yeah.
to grow, so they have the house to themselves.
Just outlasting.
Yeah.
I mean, Casey, you're talking about this tree growing in unsavory conditions and on the sides of things.
Yeah.
And then I learned earlier in the episode that this is in the same family as the madrone.
Yes.
Is this a family trait?
It kind of is.
This is like the Iron Islands, the what are they called?
The
Greyjoys.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
It is exactly right, and I'm so happy, Alex, that you brought that up.
Is this a perfect transition?
This is the perfect transition. It's kind of interesting, though. It's a perfect transition, but at the same time,
oh boy.
It is, there's an asterisk to it.
Of course.
It is always going to be, I know. But here's the situation. You are familiar with mycorrhizal fungi.
Mycorrhizal.
Michael Rhizal.
Yeah, like, I know that guy.
I'm Michael Rhizal. It's good to see you.
He's just like that guy's like just a fucking fungus all over.
He's just always around. And every year, but only once a year, he's delicious. Yes.
I'm very
right.
familiar with mycorrhizal fungi as a quick, I mean, it almost seems like.
As a quick aside, look up behind you, Alex.
There's an airplane.
There's an airplane. I'm pretty sure that's an airplane that drops water on fires.
Holy shit. That's
yeah.
not good.
Well, I mean.
Well, I guess it is good.
I guess it's fine. But I could be wrong. I'm not 100% sure.
It's flying very close to us, which makes me think that there's a fire nearby.
No, there's no fire nearby. Well, yeah. I mean, depends on how you describe nearby.
It's a bit of a hazy day.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, sorry.
For a quick refresher for our fungal associates.
Yes.
On what mycorrhizal is.
Yes. So there are
I'm keeping it, my man. Sorry.
Damn it, Alex. There are mycorrhizal fungi.
Yeah.
Which are different species of mushrooms, or I should say, I'm going to stick with fungi here.
Fungus.
And you'll know why in a second. That make a mutualistic, symbiotic relationship with the roots of plants.
Hell yeah, they do.
Almost every single species, as far as I know, I've read a couple things here and there. Some things are like every plant species has a mycorrhizal fungi.
Wow.
But I'm also like hesitant to say that, like it's really hard to say a really certain wide kind of arching statements like that. It makes me nervous to say it because there's someone who's going to be like, well, not this plant. But I'm going to say it.
Okay.
Every plant has a mycorrhizal fungi. Certainly every tree.
Is it like a one-to-one?
No. There are generalists and there are specialists.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, so some trees will have, you know, multiple different fungus on their roots all at the same time.
Mm.
Some will have only one fungus. Some will have one fungus. Rather, some fungus only grow on particular trees. So there's specialists and generalists kind of on all sides.
Okay.
What we are talking about is a specialist kind of fungi relationship with plants in the Ericaceae family.
Oh.
That is the thing that I wanted to really talk about today.
It's very It's very curious to me, the idea that like a fungus finds its niche.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Totally.
Like I know plants do.
Yeah.
And Casey has a little visitor.
A little dog. Here, can you hear the sniffing?
This is Buster.
Hi, Buster. Buster's the size of a small cat.
Yes, Buster is a very, very small dog. He has no sense of personal boundaries, but he is very sweet.
Yes, which is nice. If you had no personal boundaries and you were a jerk, this would be a different story.
Totally. Imagine him getting up in your face and then biting you.
Yeah, exactly. Then I'd be like, well, you little dog messed with the wrong ape. I can throw you off this deck.
I mean, yeah, if they were the size of Buster.
Yeah.
Toss him like a discus.
Exactly.
He's a very sweet little guy. Yes, he's my partner's dog.
Anyway.
So, yes, it is curious for me to think about, like, I guess plants feel more human than fungus do, if that makes sense.
That is so interesting to hear you say.
Although probably fungus are more human than plants.
Yeah, we are more closely related to fungus than we are to plants.
See, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But also I feel that fungus are more alien than plants are.
Isn't that a funny dichotomy that they can have both at the same time?
Yeah, plants feel more closer plants feel closer to mammals than fungus does.
Yes, totally. So here's the funny thing. Of these, 4,250 plants, so 4,250 species in the Ericaceae, which is essentially the Erica family. And Erica is also heath. So the heathlands up in the UK and Scotland and that kind of thing.
The fields of heather.
Exactly. Heather is Erica. That's the species name for it.
Oh.
So that's where the name Ericaceae comes from.
Oh, Erica is the name of heather?
Yes, or at least some species of it, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
That's the genus.
Okay.
So there's about 2,700 of these plants that make these special connections with a fungus, and those are called ericoid mycorrhizal fungi.
They're named after the family.
Yes,
holy
because
shit.
They're so unique. They're
curious.
Not, I guess, I don't, unique may not be the right term, because it's not like they're doing something that everything else doesn't do, because we've talked about mycorrhizal fungi before. There's kind of two main types. There's the ectomycorrhizal fungi, which essentially make a sheath over the roots, and then they transfer things backwards and forwards.
So cool. And then there's endo.
Which is, it shouldn't be endo, it's actually arbuscular.
Wow.
Is the term, I think, I don't want to say term du jour because it's an old term, but yes, they no longer call it endo.
Okay, well there's arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi, which send just microscopic little hair-like tendrils into the root matter.
Yes.
Through the little, I guess roots have bark, right?
Yeah, they do. They have this cortical kind of thing on the outside.
A coating of some kind.
Yes.
And they actually connect into the cerebral mainframe, as it were.
Pretty much. Well, not quite that level, but they kind of go into the cell and then they kind of stay there. I just want to say that because the cerebral mainframe, it makes me think of like the brain or like the nucleus, and they don't actually get into that section.
They don't go into the cell.
They go into the very outer sections of some cells, but they'll also just fill in the cell itself. Like there's some kinds of like kind of the space that is not taken up by everything else, the fungus will just go in and send all of its stuff in there.
You know what this reminds me of?
What?
It's like a failing company, but they have like a really good product, and a bigger company is like buys them out, and like, we know how to market this product, and then suddenly that company's flourishing.
Yeah.
But it does have to take over 100%.
It's got, you got to let them take everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is like the arbuscular gets in there and almost like becomes the cell in a way?
It kind of does, yeah.
Okay.
Like it basically says, we are the pipeline. We will make sure everything happens. Just follow us.
Wow.
It's a very interesting thing. So this is intracellular. It goes into the cell.
Cool.
There are others that just go intercellular, which is essentially they go between the cells.
Oh.
And they kind of make these arrangements or put this kind of this sheath. They call it a Hartig net, which goes around the cell walls and everything. It gets so intense. And you know what I learned that I didn't know? That there are ectophyte fungi.
What is that?
It's a fungus that lives in the cells or in between the cells of everything. Like, every leaf of every plant in the entire world has fungus that lives in the cells in the leaf.
Is that considered mycorrhizal fungi?
No, because they're on the leaf. They don't have anything to do with the roots, which is what the mycorrhiza means. Rhiza means roots.
Oh, I did not know this.
But there are some that live in the roots. There are some that live in the stems. There is a species of fungus that lives on and in everything. This is going to be something we're going to be talking about. I'm pretty sure probably you and me too.
I gave Casey like, and you and me too.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure if you're like worried about it or if you're like, wait, really?
Should we call someone?
We probably should.
Bathe in disinfectant.
We're going to learn more about this because I went down a rabbit hole and I had to stop myself.
Oh my God.
Because I'm like, this is not what we're talking about today. But what the hell? Like, it's a whole other story.
Holy shit.
Every leaf, especially tropical leaves, tropical plants, every healthy leaf that you see literally has maybe 80 or more species of fungus living in the leaf. Inside.
We're talking inside as in chlorophyll, like the way those are inside a leaf?
I don't really know.
Okay.
It's just, that is half the thing that I couldn't quite find my way to. But yes, they live in and amongst the cells of a leaf.
They walk among us.
And no one's quite sure what they do, but they have grown a couple plants. There's a dune grass. And they know that inside the leaves of this dune grass are these very specific fungi. So if they grow the dune grass in a sterile environment and there's no fungus, then it cannot withstand the salt that it normally would in its natural habitat growing on the dunes of the ocean. If you add the fungus back in, the plant thrives. So this is the fungus we are talking about grows in the roots specifically. And it looks like about 140 or so million years ago is the estimates based on the molecular clock.
Okay.
You remember the molecular clock is the idea that there are little slight mutations that happen on a very predictable time frame. So if you can look at how many of these little things have happened over time, you can basically say, count them up and say, okay, yeah, it's been about 140 years or so.
Interesting.
That is right now the estimate as to how long ago the first Ericaceae plant, the proto-Ericaceae, because they're all monophyletic, again, another big word that we've talked about before, which means they're all one clad. There's one single initial plant that started the rest of the family.
Yeah,
you know?
Cool.
So that plant made a connection with this fungus, and then all of its descendants inherited it to some degree or another.
Casey, I mean, like, speaking of chloroplast,
yeah,
or chlorophyll, I don't know. Don't even bother. It's a similar sort of grandfathered in relationship.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But with a fungus,
right? And it is
instead of an algae.
So curious, because it sounds like that this happened. And these fungus are not 100% like you and me, baby. We're doing this. We're doing this together. Without you, without me, neither one of us are going to be happy.
Yeah.
The fungus are called facultative fungi, which means they just live in the soil. And then if a root from the right kind of tree in this Ericaceae, actually not even tree, a shrub, a small herb, if it grows, the fungus is like, oh, hey, buddy. What's up? Let's be pals here. And then they send in their ecto mycorrhiza, but they're in these weird coils that come in and fill the cortical cells of the thing. Yeah, imagine just like corkscrewing your way into the cell. Yeah.
They lobotomize the roots.
They kind of do, yeah.
Yeah, they sound like opportunistic friends.
Exactly.
Like, you get a truck and suddenly this guy's like, hey, man, I got to move.
Hey, what's up, dude? It's so good to see you.
I borrow your truck.
I haven't talked to you in like 10 years.
And they borrow your truck and you never hear from them again. You knew it was happening the whole time.
Yep, you knew it was the wrong idea.
You're
and that's
fucking putz.
Whatever.
I'm speaking from experience, perhaps.
I was like, wait a second. I thought we were friends all before that, Alex.
You've helped me move twice, Casey.
Yeah, and I also, like, we were friends before and after. You didn't approach me out of the blue, which is good.
Never.
So that is, that's kind of an interesting thing. Apparently, up to 80% of the root volume can be fungal tissue. That's how much of these coils they send into the cells.
That's more fungus than man.
Yeah, by quite a bit. Well, wait, what? Who are we? Yeah, we look around. Turns out we're all fungus.
I mean, you and I. I think last episode or a couple episodes, we had a question from a listener that asked, like, think 600 million years in the future, what do you think trees are going to look like?
Yeah.
And we kind of purported that trees and fungus will become one in the same way that the chloroplast algae and leaves became one.
I think that's it. Yeah.
This is like kind of on that level.
It really is. And so this at surface level, though, this isn't new. It's happened before.
Yeah.
We know there's mycorrhizal fungi. This is just kind of this third, I don't even know if it's quite a third variety. It's just kind of a subsection of the ectomycorrhizal fungi.
Mm.
And what makes it curious is, from what I can find, is A, it's so different and it's only these kinds of things. And it's mostly ascomycetes, which are the fungus that you see and you know, okay, that's a fungus, but it's not a mushroom-like fungus.
Okay.
That's kind of the important thing to consider. They're like the weird cup funguses, or cup fungi, I should say, that you see like growing and decomposing a little twig on the ground, something like that.
Okay. I don't know if I've seen those.
Well, if you've seen anything that you thought to yourself, that's certainly a fungus, but it's not a mushroom. It's not a traditional mushroom cap.
Oh, because a mushroom is like specifically has like a stem and that like penis head.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So morels are a good example.
Truffles. Yeah.
These are all ascomycetes.
Ascomycetes.
Yes.
Okay.
They are these strange other kinds of things that essentially they're called sac fungi. So they create this little sac that has all the spores in it, and then that thing pops open and then their spores go out.
Are those still considered like a quote fruiting body?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's, you know, it's a general term for what we need. So in terms of exactly what it is, it does the same thing that all other fruiting bodies do, which is it is the part that's involved in the reproductive process. In a very explicit way. Without it, there would be no reproduction.
It's sort of the flower of it's like the flower of the fungus.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Casey, before we move on, there's a lot of planes going by.
Yeah, there are. Oh yeah.
Is that another water plane?
No, this looks like this is a like I land on water plane. This is the third time they've
like a
gone
seaplane.
By. Yeah. Cool. So they have like those buoys, you know.
Casey, please continue our wonderful story of this Erica fungus.
You got it. So the thing with this fungus is, first off, it's interesting because it grows in this specific way.
Yeah.
It is also only growing on these kinds of trees. It is in the soil already. It doesn't need the trees, but whenever a tree's there, it will make this mycorrhizal connection with it. But it also, every now and then, does saprophytic stuff.
Saprophytic.
Yeah, that essentially means that they decompose stuff.
We need a glossary.
I was gonna say, we got
episode.
A lot of terms in this episode, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, suffice it to say, that is just a decaying fungus.
Okay.
So they will actively go out and kill things and eat them up. Not necessarily like be a parasite on another plant and actually eat it from the inside out or something like that. This is one where if there's a dead stick, it will go and say, oh, sweet, I'm going to eat that stick. And it will digest that stick.
Like a turkey tail.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, turkey tails will do that. They are saprophytic fungi.
Cool.
So this is a fungus that lives in the soil. And a lot of the mycorrhizal fungi that you're familiar with would only just find different minerals and they would break those mineral bits down. Maybe it's an organic molecule or something.
Mm.
And they can break those down into forms that are usable for the plants and the trees that they're associated with. But very few of them actually will decompose the things into the molecules, then break those molecules up. A lot of times they just are better at scavenging. They just go around and they can get all the small things and they can turn them into usable things, but they don't necessarily go out and pull those from the bodies themselves. Other fungus will decompose it. Then a new fungus comes by and takes what's left from that decomposition and uses that to give back to the trees.
It's almost like fungus succession.
It kind of is, yeah. And this is such a huge complex. There's also bacteria working in these. There's insects. All sorts of different stuff. It's nematodes.
A universe of things happening.
Oh, God, that's the perfect way to describe it, yeah. So with these, they kind of do it all to the point where some people are like, is this really, like, a strict Michael Reisel connection.
Oh.
And it is. Like, I think there's everyone's very much saying yes, but it's apparently very hard, and it's a very understudied thing. It's hard to study because you have to find the exact fungus growing on the exact roots. But remember, they also just grow in the soil. So if you find one, it might just be growing in the soil, not necessarily growing as a mycorrhizal symbiont with the actual plant.
Sure.
But they also are like, we know it's there. They've done tests where they've had one blueberry with no fungus in the roots,
uh-huh.
and it is like an inch tall. And then there's another blueberry with fungus in the roots that's like 7, 8, 9 inches. All grown on the same conditions and the same everything.
Wow.
So we know that they're making this connection, but this also probably explains why Ericaceae family members are in all of the harshest spots, like we were talking about, ironically, with the madrone. Give me 5 minutes and we'll circle back to that. But yeah, so they grow in these really rough, harsh, like low oxygen, acidic environments, places that all these other plants, these neighborhoods that no one else wants to be in, the only reason they're there is because they made this connection with the fungus that can take those conditions.
They're juicing.
They really are.
Wow.
They're juicing, but the fungus doesn't necessarily need them. That's the thing.
So it's not really symbiotic.
But it is. You're exactly right, Alex. It's not, or it doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
With other symbiotic fungus, if the host tree goes away, then that fungus goes away too.
Sure, sure.
And vice versa. If the fungus goes away, the trees probably are not going to be as fit as they would be with the fungus there. So then they get outcompeted or they just die.
Yeah, but with this, it's like the tree is taken away and the fungus is like, all right, see ya. I'm going to keep kicking and doing my thing.
Exactly.
Okay.
But because they made this relationship so long ago, whenever those plants go away and the fungus is still there, that actually makes the habitat better for these plants to be there, so they'll just come back.
Oh, wow.
Because the fungus will never really go away unless some huge catastrophic thing happens. But then even if there is some huge catastrophic thing, they'll probably just be like, hey, what's up? We're back. So they've made this relationship, which is like it's unique enough to where everyone's like, this is weird. Why is this like this? But they're so hard to study and kind of understudied because they're not like maybe cranberries, blueberries are the really important things. And we don't need to study it. We can just say, yeah, okay, I don't know. It grows well in this soil. There's fungus here. Let's just live with it.
Sure.
But they're
not. Yeah, what would you get out of studying that? Well, I guess that could be said about anything.
Right. And this is, there are many things that have said, yes, we need to study this because it's kind of a curious relationship. And we don't really know why or how it's really developed over a long period of time. And we don't know why it's different.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, we don't know why it's different than all the others. And in fact, I told you we could come back. I don't know if it's been quite 5 minutes.
Are we circling?
Let's circle back real fast.
Hell yeah, madrone.
Madrones. So madrones don't have this same kind of fungus. They're in the family, but they have their very own arbutoid mycorrhizal fungi.
Please tell me what this is.
It is the same exact thing, except it only grows on madrones in the genus Arbutus and their kin, and the manzanitas, which are in Arctostaphylos.
Wow.
That's the only thing that grows this arbutoid, which is always fun to say, arbutoid.
Arbutoid.
Arbutoid mycorrhizal fungi.
That's amazing. Completely arbutoid.
Completely arbutoid. That's someone who's going to make fun of our podcast. Oh, yeah, completely arbutoid. And be like, shut up, man. But here's the other thing. There's this, this is kind of the last thing. And from here on out, I'm going to say this is almost all conjecture, at least the conclusions. Here are the facts.
Okay.
There is this one other kind of thing.
Wow.
And it's just fascinating. It has nothing to do with the tree at all in a specific sense.
Okay.
But I just wanted to cover it. It's called the monotropoid or monotropoid.
Monotropoid.
Let's say that.
Like Monopoly? Monotropoid?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. I'm not going to try and say it again because I'm just going to just gonna mess it up. But
what the hell is that?
So there are these plants. Historically, people called them Indian pipe, but more recently, we're calling them ghost pipe.
Okay.
And they are this in the genus Monotropa. I'll show you a picture. You might have seen one before. They're like these weird little candy canes that grow out of the ground.
They look like if koi was a plant.
Yes, that's a perfect description. Yeah, that's great. They're like these they have no chlorophyll in them at all. They're in the Ericaceae family, so they are flowering plants.
Okay.
And they grow up, and then they have like this tip that kind of knocks over, so they kind of look like a candy cane.
Uh-huh.
With this little like this flower head that just kind of goes
show
and
me
opens
again.
Up. There you go.
Can you zoom in a little?
I don't think I can.
Command
Sorry.
Plus.
Oh. Huh.
Casey's gonna zoom in.
Hey.
He's zooming.
Wow.
Look at him go.
There we go.
Oh, wow. That looks so fucking weird.
Yeah.
It looks like a mushroom.
It really does, yeah, right? Because it has no chlorophyll, which is, you know, that's the thing that makes a plant half the time.
Yeah, and green.
Exactly. So this is a species that, there's a couple different species, this genre, that grows only as a parasite of a specific kind of fungus that is not a traditional kind of fungus. It's another mycorrhizal fungi.
Okay.
But that mycorrhizal fungi grows on trees like pines and oaks and spruces and things like that. And then it goes from that form of mycorrhizal relationship to a relationship with the Monotropa. And it then does the same thing where it will grow into the plant, into the cells, but it specifically does not go all the way into the plant cell walls. It kind of stays along the outside.
Okay.
So it makes this other relationship with another Ericaceae plant. That plant just parasitizes the carbohydrates that the fungus gets from the tree. So it is a parasite of the fungus that is in a symbiotic, potentially parasitic relationship with the tree.
Wow.
So it's like a parasite of a sub-parasite of a tree. But that is under the premise that mycorrhizal fungi is, in fact, just a parasite that the trees are kind of taking advantage of, too,
uh-huh.
a little bit,
okay.
which then kind of makes it this mutualistic rather than a not mutualistic kind of symbiosis, where
yeah,
there's
like
just one's winning and the other isn't.
Parasitic symbiosis?
Yeah,
where
exactly.
each one is taking advantage of the other?
Yeah, which is mutualistic?
Pretty toxic, if
yeah.
you ask me.
Oh, super toxic.
Yeah.
But I guess if plants are just like all business, you know, and they're like, yeah, okay, this is, yeah, you take advantage of me, I'm taking advantage of you. I guess we're in relationship right now. I don't know, but it's this other thing, and it's kind of interesting because they are like, they have no chlorophyll, and it makes me wonder if the Ericaceae family made this big evolutionary agreement with this one kind of fungus. That one kind of fungus worked really well for them, so well that one plant just kind of started taking advantage of that and then just like switched over here. I guess, let me just wrap this up, because I don't really know where I'm going at this point.
Okay.
It's mostly that Ericaceae has something going on. And I'm sure if I kept diving into this and like just went down that rabbit hole 10
yeah.
more, you know, hours worth of research, probably 100 hours, then I would be able to really know. But the most I found is that people have not studied this to the extent that they've studied other kinds of mycorrhizal fungi.
Yeah.
Probably, again, for the reason that it is not the kind of thing that is like really a moneymaker for people. Like, we're not eating off of these trees. We are not necessarily dependent on them. Yeah, blueberries and cranberries and things like that.
They're not like industry trees.
Exactly. The trees themselves are not industry trees.
Yeah.
So we've just not really done a whole bunch of research. And the research that we have done is actually really hard to do. So it's just been kind of this, not ignored, but not like really steered into.
Sure.
But then you see these weird things happen where they split off evolutionarily speaking 140 million years ago, and then some of them split off and do different things themselves in weird ways. The arbutus and the manzanitas, why are they different? Why did they do that when they already had this other thing going, conceivably with their other homies way back when? Then why are these monotropas doing all this weird stuff? Like how is all this work? It's this thing, Alex, that the sourwood is just the tip of the iceberg
wow.
for what exactly is going on. What exactly is going on? I don't know. But I want to get to the bottom of it.
I'm the police chief saying, you got to quit this case. It's cold. It's dead in the ground.
Like, it's not true. Look at this, Captain. How can you say that? There's so many dead cranberries out here. So, yeah, it's, but it apparently is so, so useful for these plants that they've just gone everywhere in the world in the hardest possible locations.
Yeah.
Like the Arctic. This is where this fungus is helping these plants live. The highest mountains in the Andes. Like, who knows? It's, they're everywhere.
It's a very curious case.
I don't know. I don't get it.
Well, we, you know, some episodes, it's kind of, it's a little existential when I have to say we have to give a rating to this tree. After all this, it seems pretty arbitrary, if you ask me.
It really is.
Wait a minute. But we got to do so after a break. We'll be right back with the exciting conclusion of the Sourwood here on Completely Arbitrary. Alex here. Here's a little something about me. I love to be cozy. Coziness is of utmost importance to me, and I am in a constant search for coziness. And that is why we present to you Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes luxurious bedding and clothing products. And what do I mean by luxurious? Let me tell you this. I now have Cozy Earth sheets on my bed. I wear a full Cozy Earth sweatsuit to bed. And I have been getting the best sleep of my life. It is quite literally the softest material I've ever put on my body. And my skin is so happy in it. I usually have a little bit of a sensory thing. I don't like things touching my skin. Clothes are tough. But with Cozy Earth, I am treated to superior softness, unparalleled fabric, materials, and weave. This is a real endorsement. It's the most comfortable material to ever grace my birthday suit. And guess what? You deserve this coziness too. So treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. And you know what? Completely Arbitrary listeners, a little inside detail here. You all get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. That's TREES for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Now you go and get cozy.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax. The way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the Sourwood.
Yes, more
this is my NPR. I get to the NPR mode.
Hello.
Those long random pauses.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's just, it reminds me also of the local jazz station, which everyone should listen to, KMHD.
KMHD.
And yeah, they also do that because they're like, hey, welcome back.
It just makes for good radio. You're like, huh? Welcome what?
Jazz.
Welcome jazz. Casey, yeah. It's time for a review of the Sourwood.
I think it sounds great.
I'm very excited for this.
It should be good.
I have some thoughts.
I want to know what they are, and I think it's good that we're doing this before we actually try these leaves that are right next to us.
Yes.
So I think it's best that we do this on aesthetics only, and then once we decide, do we like the taste of oxalic acid or do we not? That's going to be a better way for us to do this.
And it's safe to eat, correct?
It is, yeah. I don't necessarily recommend that you eat it entirely.
We're going to chew it and spit it out.
That would be what I would recommend.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Casey, let's give our review on this tree, and here's how it works. If you're hearing another plane, we got some news. There was a big storm.
Yep.
In Oregon today.
Yeah, there's a nice little thunderstorm this morning.
Mm-hmm. Of course, with thunder comes lightning. Very, very frightening.
Yep.
And it put about 40 acres of land on fire, as it does. At least it wasn't a human.
We did not have 40 acres of human on fire.
Right. That's what I mean. Casey, here's how our review works. We're going to get our final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. As our resident expert, we'll begin with you.
Alrighty. So, this tree, I remember learning way back when.
Wow.
When I was very first learning how to identify trees.
Cool.
And let me tell you, I just love it. I think it's a beautiful tree. Again, it's not a tree that is going to be this giant centerpiece that's going to be like this massive statement, like a huge magnolia or something. It's not that tree. It ain't that thing.
And it doesn't, it's not trying to be.
It doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
No, exactly. It's kind of like the Kentucky coffee tree, where it's kind of like, I don't need this. I don't need here.
Wow.
I don't want to be here. I know where I want to be, and I'm okay with that.
Quick interjection. That reminds me of, I don't even want to be around anymore from that sketch from I Think You Should Leave.
Yeah, I don't even want to be around
anymore. I don't even want to be around anymore.
It's kind of like that. It's like it's also I think of the Japanese maple or the vine maple. They're trees that are like, you know what? I actually really like just being over here.
Yeah,
I don't want to be in the spotlight, so don't force me to be there.
Yeah,
but if I'm there, I'll just do what I do.
Wow.
But this is the kind of tree that everyone should plant somewhere on their property if it's appropriate, because it just does really well. It will find these fungus, it will make this connection, and it will just kind of cruise. And they have the most beautiful fall foliage like you'll ever see. Like, I mean, stunna of a color.
Would you call it red as fuck?
I would probably say that, yeah. Now, it also has these really fun flowers, which I should just note as a side note, are apparently, again, and now that I've read this multiple times from multiple different trees, the best honey you've ever had.
Oh.
So I'm starting to take that with, let's say, a grain of salt, okay?
But with a drop of honey, as they say.
Yes, just a little bit of drop of honey. apparently, yeah, people love it. The flowers come out, they're fragrant, and bees just go wild for
them
and make some of the best honey that's around.
You know what? I see it.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah, it's
I
not
get that
it's,
vibe.
You wouldn't not expect it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give it credit for that. I'm not going to raise it up to the best honey tree there has been, because
that already has a place.
Exactly. And now everyone says that. So now I'm like, this is a fraud. I'm not into it, you know?
Oh, everything on the internet has to be, this is the best. Everything is like an absolute
statement. Yeah, exactly. It's not just okay.
Right.
Anyway, and I love the bark, and I love the way the tree grows. I'm a fan of trees that look, I don't want to say goofy because it feels a little insulting, but I like a goofy looking tree.
Yeah.
A tree that it just kind of grows and just does its own thing and doesn't follow the archetype of what people are like, thou shalt be a tree if thou grow like this. This is a tree that just does its own thing. Just very much like the Madrone, where it says, no, I've made my choice and I'm sticking with it.
Wow.
That's all. So I think for this, hold on. Let me balance that scale a little bit.
Oh, here we go. It's overplanted.
It's not overplanted, actually. No, this you should plant it.
It's underplanted.
Yes, should plant more of it. But it's also not a tree that will just blow you out of the water.
Sure.
You know, like you see a tree and your jaw drops. Maybe in fall, but all the other times, not really.
As a man who likes hyperbolic trees,
exactly.
This is not one.
This is not one. Yeah. It doesn't get there. It is a tree that you need to plant next to another tree. The big tree is going to be the one that you see, and you're like, oh, wow, look at that. That thing's huge. It's gorgeous. Oh, and look at this nice little shrubby thing right next to it, to which you have to respond, oh, it's actually a tree, please. So I think I'm going to give the sourwood, I think I'm going to 8.1 this one.
Wow.
Another high score.
Great score.
There are trees that I just enjoy, and this is one of them. I think I'm kind of betraying myself, Alex, a little bit.
How's
this
that
podcast?
Case?
Because now that we've been doing it for so long, I just want to cover trees that I enjoy. So all the scores are high.
Well, sure.
It's you got to find me when I'm in a bad mood. And then you're like, Casey, you want to do this tree? And I'm like, you know what? Yeah.
I'm going to do apple 3.
I'm so mad right now. I just had a bad week. I don't want to talk about it. I'm just going to take it out on this tree.
You know, Casey, I think as podcasters, we have to talk about the same subject every week.
Yes, true.
And you might as well talk about stuff you love.
Yes, exactly. This is one of them.
8.1 Golden Cones of Honor.
Doesn't get up to 2 because, well, you know.
What could get it there, Casey?
What could get there? It's almost unattainable.
It wasn't rhetorical, but.
No.
Anyway. I love that. It wasn't rhetorical. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. Anyway.
8.1 Golden Cones of Honor for the Sourwood from Casey Clapp.
Alex.
Casey, I'm quite fond of this tree so far.
Okay.
I'm sure that I've seen a million of them. Mm-hmm. I just like, you know, like so many trees, I just like don't know it till I see it.
Yeah.
Or don't see it until I know it, I reckon.
Don't see. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. I gotcha.
I like its leaves. I like its flowers a lot. I think it's very pretty flowers. I love the fact that the flowers and fruit kind of grow at the same time, ombre fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I love a tree that has good why would you grow there-ness.
Yes.
And this tree definitely has it.
Yeah.
If you recall, I'm a big fan of the Madrone.
Yes, I do recall this.
I also love the fact that this family is kind of like just all over the place.
They're
kind
of like the black sheep.
Yeah. It's a family of black sheep.
Black sheep? I don't know. I just don't. This family is just an enigma for me,
yeah,
Alex.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that it like, its goal, it feels like the Erica family.
Yeah.
Its goal is just to survive,
mm-hmm.
and it will take any means to do that.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like that was its goal, and it's accomplished that goal.
Oh, now it's just like crushing.
It is.
It's just living the high life.
Every blueberry you've ever had, every huckleberry, every cranberry, it's all the same. They all come from this. Every rhododendron, they all do the same thing.
And I'm a big fan of all those plants, too. Yeah. I know those plants are not up for judgment at the moment.
They've escaped our wrath.
By virtue of not being trees. But I have a fondness for the sourwood, lacking familiarity. That's okay in my book.
Mm-hmm.
Casey, it's funny that you said 8.1 because I chose my score before you chose yours.
What?
And I'm going 8.2.
Wow.
Golden Cones of Honor.
I can't believe that.
It's true.
I love it when we're on the same page.
Me too. It feels like I feel a little bit validated. I'm like, all right, okay, yeah, cool.
See, I also feel that validated because we look at trees very differently, you and I.
It's true.
I will admit, I have probably rubbed off on you, so you might see trees the way I see trees more often than you would maybe see it the way someone else does.
Perhaps, but I think I have my own spin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know what that spin is.
Nobody does. It's your own.
It's the Croson special trademark. That was our review of the Sourwood. A great conversation, Casey.
I agree.
It is time for a segment.
Let's do it.
You know, sometimes that on that trail, you get a little hungry.
You get a little peckish.
Peckish. Peckish is such a Casey Clapp word.
Is it really? I love it, actually. It's one of my favorite words, so I'm glad to hear that.
And you got to get yourself a trail snack. This is Trail Snacks.
Nom, nom, nom. Nom, nom, nom. Nom, nom, nom.
Okay, Casey. Casey's got his headphones.
I'm ready. Sorry. I had to also have my hair. It's kind of flowing in the wind, so we got to do it.
Okay, so this is Trail Snacks, and we have some special guests.
Hello, everybody.
We have Lily, and we have...
Howdy.
Mr. P and Master K.
What's up, you guys?
And we are ready to try, as we alluded to earlier...
Yes.
The sourwood leaf.
The sourwood leaf. Now, we skipped over this a little bit, but we should note that the sourwood leaf is actually a very medicinal thing. It's been used for medicine for thousands and thousands of years. Anyone who lived near this tree would use it for a thousand different things.
Yeah.
It was, it's kind of one of those things where whenever you have some kind of plant that's really intense, it's got like some intense flavor, intense aroma, people are like, there's something to it.
Right.
And then often it does. It has something to it. They would use this for like urinary things is kind of what it would do. It would help speed things up if you're a little bit like, well, it's not quite working, and this would help you out.
Okay.
Yeah. It's also what we're trying to say a diuretic, I think is the term I'm looking for.
It'll make you pee.
It'll make you pee.
Casey, ever the formalist.
Yes, I like to say things like, well, it's sort of, well, it's somewhat like pee. He's like, okay.
That's your Royal Society character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I'm reminded of the sassafras, which is one of those plants that's like had some strong sort of taste.
Yeah.
And people were like, well, this must be like, doing something.
Whoa,
and
what is this? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. There's a bunch of other trees we could probably come up with that have a similar thing to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So common.
For sure.
Now, the other thing is that inside this, we brought it up a little bit earlier, this, the flavor in here that we're all about to taste is oxalic acid.
Ooh, acid.
And that is the same thing in oxalis. Are you guys familiar with this? The little clover-like plants that grow in the bottom of forests areas?
Oxalis?
Oxalis. It looks like a three-leafed clover.
I don't know if I've seen this.
Yeah, I guarantee that you have. If you walk out into the forest, into any kind of moist area, you'll probably find some amount of that. It's okay if he's here.
I want to interject that Buster the dog really loves Casey.
He does, and I love Buster the dog. He just wants to eat some of my leaf. I'm not going to
do it. Is he?
I'm sorry, you can't
I
have
hope
it.
It's not toxic.
I don't think it is, but if it is, that's okay. We'll squeeze you out.
He'll throw up and it'll all be fine.
Exactly.
Okay, so everyone, let's all take a bite.
And you at home, go find your own tree. Pause. And if you can go find your own tree, we want to hear it also.
We should sell these on the merch store.
We really should just leaves.
Get a laser engraver and put dark logo on it.
That sounds great.
Hey, that's not a bad idea. All right. Okay, here on the count of three, we're all going to take a bite and chew, but not swallow, this sour wood. Let's go. 1, 2, 3.
It's very sour.
Ooh, doggy.
There it is. There it is. Ow. Everyone.
We're all yakking and retching.
Like,
the boys are spitting over the balcony.
Oh, I hope you guys are all okay. Yeah, okay. We got Sour Patch Kids. Okay.
What do you think it tastes like? Sour Skittles?
Sour Skittles? Yeah, okay. Okay. Uh-huh. Lily, do you have anything? Gross
Lily
is what we
it's
hear.
Gross.
Okay,
that's very evocative
fair.
Word. Yeah. You guys are going to think I'm crazy.
Alex, what do you think?
I love it.
He loves it. You are such a freak.
I think it tastes like kind of sour green grapes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It has
that
leafiness to it, right?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So this is...
Wow, give me another.
This is there it is, right
Fill
there.
Me up.
Yeah, yeah, you got that front a little bit. This is... I love it. It's 100%. Like it adds a strange tanginess, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people historically have taken this or the oxalis, and they would toss it into a salad. Mm. And so you'd have, like, a salad that's kind of this neutral kind of flavor.
Yeah.
And then you have this, like, pang, pang, pang of, like, this acidic kind of... tanginess that comes to it.
I can see this offsetting like earthy greens really well.
Yes, exactly.
It's almost lemony in a
yeah,
way, Casey.
Yeah, totally.
Why does it taste like this?
This is just the acidness. So our tongues will pick up, you've heard often like the idea of the umami and the acid and the sugar in food, you know?
Yeah.
It's similar to that, except of course the acid in this is just meant to keep herbivores from eating it.
Mm.
So it puts these different acidic chemicals inside the leaf. So whenever anything eats it, it's like, ooh, blah, oh, I don't like it. Just like what I did.
It's a defense mechanism.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know why it does it, but that is why we call it the sour wood, because it's pretty sour. Oh, now Alex.
The second one
it.
Is not as tasty.
Yeah.
I think this one is like bigger and maybe the flavor's different.
Yeah, maybe.
Mr. P, you want to get me like a smaller one? Like a smaller, younger leaf? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Thanks, bud.
Yeah, I'm gonna stop trying. I don't like it at all.
See this one? It was better.
Bitter?
Better.
Better.
Woo!
There it is.
I think the smaller and younger the leaf.
I have like a medium one. That one was worse than the bigger one.
You have a medium one? It tastes stronger than the bigger one? Yeah.
Okay. See, I think this all makes sense.
This is a scientific review. All
it
of
sure
sudden.
Is. Yeah. Well, we have five people, so let's give a thumbs up or a thumb down.
Yeah.
If you like
how do
it.
We feel about thumbs about thumbs?
Okay. We got.
Show me your thoughts on thumbs.
We got one thumb down. We got two thumbs up. Alex, your thumbs up too.
Both the boys are thumbs up. Okay. Lily, thumbs down. Casey,
I am gonna be a sideways thumb.
You cannot do that.
I can't. Okay. Then I'm gonna be an up thumb.
Okay.
Now I'm gonna be a down.
This
thumb.
Is why we have a 0 to 10 rating system,
exactly,
Casey.
Yeah. yeah. But now I'm only getting binary here. That's what makes a problem. I tried to go five, and you said no. It's one or zero.
I said this?
Yeah, you just said just now. You said you can't. I can't go medium. I can't go side. I have to go up or down.
Well, just because this is our show, yeah. Completely arbitrary. Let's give it a rating of 0 to 10.
Ooh.
What's a word that rhymes with cone that is a food?
Cone. Ice cream cone.
Sure.
Can you rhyme cone with cone?
I think so.
Comb, maybe? No.
We combs.
Yeah,
I like cone.
Honeycomb? Cone, okay.
Oh, obviously. Yeah. Honeycomb. Let's do comb.
Comb.
I made fun of it at first, but I think it's really good.
Nice. Okay, thank you. This is how it works, you guys.
So I give the sourwood leaf, man, I'm thinking like a 7.5 golden combs.
Well,
of honor.
Okay, all right. What do you guys think over there?
I say like a 6.5.
We got 6.5. Okay.
Do you want to be on the mic? We got a 6.5 golden combs.
Okay.
We have a 6.
A 6. Okay, this is all in the.
So maybe a 6.
And another 6.
All right, I'm going 4.
Wow.
It's not that I don't like it. It's just that I don't like enjoy it. I wouldn't think to myself, yeah. I'm going to put this on my salad. I'm going to eat it. I'm going to love it.
Sure. I guess that's what we kind of are rating it on is like how much you would enjoy just like eating it as if it were food.
Yes. This is a novelty that I enjoy. Just like there's a Umbellularia californica or the Sweet Bay Laurel, Sweet Bay Magnolia. These are plants where you can say, hey guys, check this out. And you rip the leaf open. You give it to someone to smell.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, whoa, that's intense.
Sure.
Oh my God.
But you wouldn't pick it and put it in your food.
Exactly. That's where I'm at with this.
I get you, Case.
It's a novelty also for identification. If you're like, I have a feeling this is a sourwood. How am I going to figure this out? Take a bite, see if it's sour.
I mean, that's very rudimentary, but hey, it works.
It is, yeah. Hey, sometimes the hammer's just the easiest tool.
Hey,
been
man,
around forever.
You're telling me, brother. That was Trail Snacks. Thank you to our wonderful guests
for eating some sour leaves.
And
keeping Alex and I in check while we take adventures and try to decide things for ourselves. Sometimes it's nice to have an extra party involved to
it's
be
true.
Like, you guys are in the wrong direction here.
See, I did notice that the three of these people were in kind of the mid-range of their scores. You were low, I was high.
Yeah, see, that's what's important. This is the rule of averages or something? The more you get, the more average it becomes?
This is why, yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay,
this is why podcasting is unhealthy, because it gives you the opportunity to have extreme opinions live on air.
We are a very toxic podcast because of that.
Casey, that was Trail Snacks.
All right.
It's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This week, our question comes from... I'll say, what's the opposite of a fan favorite?
A
host favorite?
A muggle's least favorite.
What?
I don't know.
I'll say a host favorite. Angie Smith. Angie's an OG fan.
What up, Angie?
Hi, Angie.
It's good to hear from you.
Angie says, it has to be asked, what are your thoughts on the survival of the banyan tree in Maui?
That is a very good question.
As we know, there are, I believe, still fires, wildfires raging in Maui right now.
I think, at least, if not raging, they're at least still popping around.
Yeah, I guess I used the word raging too bluntly there. So yeah, Casey, what do you think?
Yeah, so this is banyan. It's probably the bengalensis is my guess.
Mm-hmm.
The famous fig that grows and is planted all over the place. And I've actually been to Hawaii, not to Maui, but I've seen these kinds of banyan trees growing in, I think I was on Kauai where I specifically saw the one I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
And they are... In
what
a technical
call it?
Sense.
What was the species? What did you call it?
Bengalensis. It's our It's our Ficus bengalensis. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
So in this case, probably just normally grown. But then there's 750 different species, so I'm not 100% sure. But they grow essentially the same as bengalensis.
I see.
Where they have all those big aerial roots that come down off the branches and creates this big giant thing.
We love strangler figs here.
Yeah, we really do. So all of these trees are not native to Hawaii. I don't believe there's any figs that are native to Hawaii.
They're more native to Southeast Asia, Polynesia.
Yes, exactly. And down into the tropics of Africa. And I think there might be some in... maybe some in South America, but I'm not sure.
Native?
Don't quote me on that.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, down into the Pacific and that kind of thing. So this is a tree that was planted about 150 years ago. It's not native, so, you know, there's this kind of bit, but it's a symbol of the tree, you know? It's not a symbol of ancient Hawaii, but it's a symbol of the people and the place today.
Yeah.
And it is, it's a giant tree, and as I was talking about this and have been keeping up on the news, the fires there are just, it's an atrocious thing. Like, it's absolutely one of those, and I take this from the podcast, of course I love, The History of Rome, where he's like, I hate when everyone says it's a perfect storm. They just throw that around these days, and they just say, it's a perfect storm. It's like, no, it's just like a normal thing that happened.
Just a coincidence.
And that's it, yeah. So this is, in a literal and figurative sense, a perfect storm of a situation, both for uncontrollable and somewhat controllable reasons. This massive conflagration destroyed everything and left like this tree potentially still alive. But because it is this tree, it has like a higher meaning. And trees are something that everyone knows. I'm like, yes, they mean a lot. They're really important for ways that are more than just, that's a nice tree that's shading my house. This is a nice tree that exists because it's pretty. They have all these other existential things that we can't quite measure, but we know are there. So when you see this tree that is growing and still alive amidst all this devastation, it gives you hope because the tree itself is like, I'm not finished. I'm going to keep going.
Trees are naturally metaphorical.
Exactly. And this fits the moment perfectly.
Yeah.
So I think that it's a spectacular thing to rally around. You know, aside from this biological thing where I was like, well, it's not even native to Hawaii.
Boo.
It's like, shut up. It doesn't matter if that's the case because it is this symbol. And
yes,
you don't have to have this, you know, the symbol can just be a symbol for the symbol's sake. It doesn't have to have all this other kind of bona fides, you know, to necessarily make it, you know, that good symbol.
We don't need the "but actually" crew to chime in.
Exactly, yeah. Which is, you know, most of the time it's me, so I have to be like, oh, let's just...
I don't lope you in with those people.
Okay, good, thank you.
Yeah.
So I think it's great. And I have a strange relationship with wildfires and a lot of things. The most recent book I've read is called Otherlands, and at the end it talks a lot about the climate and what we're going through now versus what we went through like millions of years ago in like mass extinction level kind of stuff, where they're like, we're not messing around when we tell you that the things that are changing are big and important, because the last time it happened this fast on this scale, the entire Earth and 90% of the life on it perished.
Yeah.
So there's this naturalness to fires. There's also this unnaturalness to fires, the way they're happening now. So in Maui, so many people died and so much destruction happened about this cultural thing, because I'm also this person who loves the small cultural bits of a place, you know, the little neighborhood shops, your old little houses that have been turned into pubs that you can go into and hang, and it has this nice little feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
So like culturally, the destruction's massive and just incalculable. And so the fact that there is this thing that is not built by humans, whether or not it was planted by humans, it has grown and it has done its own thing and it survived on its own merit. That, I think, is something that we can all look at and think, even amidst all this destruction, life prevails. It's still there. It's cooking.
Yeah.
And it gives you hope. And you have to have hope in this immediate moment, but also in the larger context of the moment that we're living in. Honestly, it's just the era we're beginning. I think it's really important. I think it's really important that people focus on that. But I think we can't focus on it until the crisis fades in the background of the news cycle.
Yeah.
And then everyone there is like, oh yeah, the old fig tree that survived that big massive fire. I think it should also be like, we need to look at trees that are still alive in normal situations as important symbols of what we can do and how life will continue and how we need to be focusing on all the rest of the life in the world in order to focus on our lives in this world. Does that make sense?
Beautiful, Casey.
Yeah, so I'm pro the Lahana fig tree.
Wow. My answer is, what Casey said.
Well said, Alex.
Thank you so much, Angie, for your question. If you've got a question for us, join the Patreon, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. Of course, the crown jewel of our Patreon, the Cone of the Month Club. Every month you get cool cone stickers illustrated by different artists.
In fact, just break in real fast.
Casey is grabbing a little translucent bag.
It's actually a bag that you gave me.
Is this really? Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you gave it to me. I just maybe never gave it back.
I believe a cable came in that bag.
I brought a bunch of stickers for Mr. P and Master K.
That's right.
Well, what's up, you guys?
Casey threw them on the...
I didn't mean them to go off.
He did sort of a make it rain. All these cone stickers.
Yeah, these are all the cone stickers. These are a bunch of ones that we have. If you join the Cone of the Month Club, as I rudely interrupted Alex...
Please do.
You can actually get all of these... Even though these are our backlog, let's see, what do we got there? Show us these cones.
Yeah, we got a Coulter Pine that glows in the dark.
That one glows in the dark.
Yep. And we got a Monterey Cypress there.
Yep.
We got a...
Those are tree buds. Those are postcards we're going to send out.
Eastern White Pine. We got a Ponderosa Pine.
Big cone.
Not a Ponderosa.
China Fir.
What is that one? That one.
That's Ponderosa.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, I mixed it up with a different one.
Yeah. Now, if you want to have, what Alex, I think you're trying to say is if you want to have as much joy and excitement as everyone here.
That is what we're trying to express here.
Join the Cone of the Month Club.
Yep. Patreon.com/arbitrarybot. It's the best way to support this podcast. If you get to the end of your month and think, hey, you know what? The several hours of enjoyment and knowledge that I earned from
You've been doing push-ups this whole time, right?
From Casey and Alex. It's worth $10 or even $5 or even $3 or even $1. Join the Patreon. Show us a little love so we can continue to make this show that you love.
That's right.
Casey Clapp.
With that, Alex.
Wow. Thank you for talking about the sourest of woods.
Thank you for the opportunity. And thanks all of you guys for coming out here and eating this with us.
Thank you so much to our special guests. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.